Dr. Robert Taubert talks about how to get more meaningful work done on today's episode of Teaching in Higher Ed. Produced by Innovate Learning, maximizing human potential. Welcome to this episode of Teaching in Higher Ed. I'm Bonnie Stachowiak, and this is the space where we explore the art and science of being more effective at facilitating learning. We also share ways to increase our personal productivity, especially today, so we can have more peace in our lives and be even more present for our students. Today, I'm welcoming back to the show Dr. Robert Taubert. He's an associate professor in the mathematics department at Grand Valley State University in Michigan. As a professor, he teaches courses mainly for computer scientists, and he also teaches his department's online calculus course in the summertime. Robert, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back, Bonnie.
I know we both have been excited about this conversation since we both are practitioners of the Getting Things Done system. First off, when did you start using Getting Things Done, or when did you first get introduced to the book or the work?
Oh my goodness. Well, I can actually pinpoint the precise moment, not when I started using Getting Things Done, but when I realized that I needed something like this in my life. I was at my previous job, a small liberal arts college, and I was just walking down the hallway. And, you know, small college, you see everybody. I saw my dean walking the other direction, and he just looked at me and said, "So I'll see you at 2? And I just said, "You bet." And I had no idea what I was supposed to be seeing him about, or that I had an appointment with him. And I went, eventually just sort of showed up at his office and kind of went with it from there. But I realized, you know, it's a chance encounter with the dean today, but which is no big deal if I blow it. But tomorrow it could be something really, really serious that I could just completely, you know, ruin my career with it for all I know. So I needed something other than what I had, which was just letting stuff sit in my inbox all day long. And I did some research about productivity and time management and so forth. And I saw that a lot of nerd people, like in my discipline, math and computer science, were gravitating towards something called GTD. And I just started digging into it, found that David Allen had written this book called Getting Things Done, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity. And I picked it up and read it. And it's really, it's not an overstatement to say that reading that book over the summer of, I guess it was probably 2005, it's been a while, changed my life for the better in ways that most books that I read do not. And ever since then, I've been trying to, you know, hone my practice of this, but really I can trace it back to about 10, 11 years ago.
I'm going to be linking in the show notes, which will be at teachinginhighered.com/120. to the revised Getting Things Done book. He revised it. David Allen is the author, and he revised it in 2015. I've read both versions, and like you, Robert, I really got a lot out of the first one. And I was able to have a friend of mine actually went to work for the David Allen company. And as they go through their extensive coaching training, she was able to pick a couple of guinea pigs that she had to go in and essentially do their coaching. And I don't even remember what it costs for a day of Getting Things Done coaching, but let's just say it would be probably out of my price range. And
absolutely.
Yeah, that really helped me see where there were holes in the way that I had approached it to then. But I want to recommend that people read the revised one. My critique, I think, of the former version would be that it just seemed so deep and that you had to be doing every single piece to really be doing the practice, and had a lot of heady stuff, but maybe not as practical of steps. And I think they really shored that up with the new version. And I know you'll be shoring it up for us a lot today. We're going to be going through the 5 steps that, and on their website, I'll also be linking to these 5 steps. They describe this process as applying order to chaos, which is exactly what you described. And we start out with something called capture. And I want to mention that you and I are going to be going through all 5 steps, but that there actually is an entire episode that my husband Dave and I recorded about our capture processes, if anyone wants to go a little bit deeper than what you and I will have time for today. Because I'll say this, especially for those of us that go from office to office, working in home offices, maybe working at our, and then going from classroom to classroom, you know, this really does take on a whole new life than for those of us that are used to the traditional inbox that sits on our desk and there's only one of them. So what are some of the ways you think about when you talk about capture, collecting what has your attention, Robert?
Well, for me, I'm like you say, I mean, I work in a lot of different environments. So sometimes I work in my office here at Grand Valley State University. Sometimes I'm at home. Sometimes I'm on the road. Sometimes I'll be just driving in my car between work and home, and some idea will pop into my head. And if I don't capture it, it's going to be gone. I don't trust myself to remember anything from one moment to the next anymore. So for me, capture just means I need to have some way in any context that I'm in to grab a hold of anything that gets my attention. If I feel like it's going to be something I want to keep, I need to go ahead and capture it and put it in. For me, sometimes in my office, that's just as simple as grabbing a post-it note, writing it out on a post-it note, and throwing it into a physical inbox that I have sitting here in front of me. I also use a tool called Todoist on my computer. The last time I was on your show, that was my recommendation at the end, was Todoist. And it has a quick capture feature where you just hit a quick hotkey and you can type in what you need to know and it saves it. If I'm in the car, it means I pull out my phone and I tell Google to take a note for me. Google's got great voice integration where you can just tell it to take a note and it'll put something in Google Keep for you. So for me, capture is all about having the tools 24/7 in any situation where something might come up that you want to keep, to be able to keep it in a trusted system.
What about when a student comes up to you after a class? You just got done teaching, and I don't know about you, I'll sometimes even have lines of students who are waiting to say something. What's your method of capturing after class, if that even happens to you as well?
Usually that happens, or it's during class even sometimes. I'm almost never without my MacBook if I'm teaching. So I will just, when the student's gone, I'll just hit my little hotkey on Todoist and type it in some truncated form that I think I might be able to decipher later, and it will just be sitting there in my Todoist inbox the next time I get a chance to review it. So, or if I happen to have shut my lid on my MacBook and I don't even trust myself to remember the thing I'm trying to capture long enough to sign in again, that's like maybe a 10-second process, but you know, you can forget stuff. I'll just grab the nearest sheet of paper or even turn around and write it on the whiteboard and then boot my computer up again and then capture it. Just some way, somehow, get it out of your brain, right? That's one of the big points about getting things done, is getting things out of your brain and into a system so you're not having to think about it.
If someone started to try to practice GTD and they stopped after capture, their life would probably be just as much, if perhaps not even more, chaotic. Would you agree?
Absolutely, because now you have all this stuff that you capture and there's no organization to it. You haven't processed it yet. You don't know what it means. So you just have all these post-it notes and to-do items. You just have longer to-do lists, and that's sort of depressing and makes you not want to do anything with this getting things done anymore.
I think that's kind of with stickies. I still have stickies at both home office and work, and I tend to doodle a lot. And there's some literature out there that says doodling's a helpful thing, but you know, I get done and it's just a sticky note with a bunch of random things. Sometimes I'm just drawing something, but sometimes it's words that are supposed to mean something. So one of the things I think is really helpful with capture is to read or review for action. And we do that with our emails. When I'm reading my emails, I'm saying, is there anything I need to do? Do. I'm asking myself that question with every email.
And yes, exactly.
Same thing with the stickies. So I need to be pretty prepared to just toss them. Another thing that I'll sometimes do, because I can get a little sticky crazy, is having some sort of way on our phone of capturing stickies. Evernote is just one of many tools that has a real easy way of just capturing a sticky note. It actually crops off the edges of the image, and all you see in that note is the sticky, and then it can be reviewed for action. The next step in the five steps going from order to chaos is clarify. And you started to talk a little bit about this, Robert. This is where we process what it means. Tell us a little bit about how you clarify.
Well, you can just take any inbox you wish. It can be your email inbox or a physical inbox. I'm sitting here staring right now at a pretty full physical inbox in my office. And at some point, if I want to be at peace with what's sitting here looking at me in my inbox, I got to go through each thing and ask myself, what am I supposed to do with this? It's kind of like you just mentioned, you know, is this something that I even need to have around at all? Can I just toss it? Do I need to file it away? Is it something that pertains to me at all? Do I need to defer it? This is all about deciding, first of all, whether or not the thing in your inbox, the thing that you just captured, is actionable in the first place. If it's not actionable, then we have some choices. We could either trash it. If it's not actionable and it doesn't contain any information I want to keep, just get rid of it. Just delete it. for emails particularly, I mean, I don't have any data on this, but it seems like about 90% of the emails that I get in my inbox are not actionable. And of those 90%, about half of them are just delete on site emails. Like there's nothing, I don't have to do anything with this, and there's nothing in there that pertains to anything. So I just delete it, just get rid of it with confidence. Or maybe it's something that's not actionable, but it might be someday. So then you can file this away. Or maybe it's just reference material. Like I got an email just now from a conference I'm going to be attending next month. It's not something I need to act upon right now. It's just information about the conference. It's got my abstract number and so on and so forth. So I want to keep it. I don't want to trash it, but it's not something I have to do anything with right now. So I need to have a place for that. I have to decide for it. But sometimes, many times, we have things that come into our inboxes, whether it's physical or electronic, that we do need to act on. Like I get an email from a student asking a question. Okay, I don't trash that, obviously, and I'm not going to just file it away. I need to decide what I'm going to do with it. So that is an actionable item. I need to answer this student's question. Or if I get I had a second email from this conference, it was asking me to facilitate a roundtable. Okay, so that's not reference information. That's something I need to act upon. And then I have to decide what is the next physical thing that I can possibly do to act upon the thing that is actionable. So clarifying, processing what something means is all about deciding, first of all, whether it's actionable, what to do with it if it isn't, and then what to do with it if it is.
The next step is organize, where we put it where it belongs. We put action items on the right kind of list that we're going to regularly have come back into our attention span. And what is the way that you approach organizing?
Yeah, so I've played around with my system. I'm sure you have too, and that your system's kind of in a constant state of flux. But where I am right now, I'm pretty comfortable with. So when I'm processing things out of my inboxes, okay, if something is, well, obviously if something's not actionable and trash, you just throw it away or shred it or whatever. Something that's one of these sort of someday maybe kind of items, it's not actionable now, but it might be, or if it's reference, I take it straight into Evernote. Evernote for me is a great tool for saving all this stuff that you get in your inboxes that isn't really actionable, but you don't want to get rid of it either. Evernote's it has many, many strengths, and one of its great strengths, it has a terrific search engine built into it. Even for things like if I scan a document from my department scanner or using my iPad, it will digitize the text from that document, and it is now searchable. So if I wanted to go in, or you know, like last night, I was helping my son with his spelling words, and I digitized. That was a paper item that came into my inbox the first day of school. So I took it, I scanned it, trash the paper, and now I have the Evernote thing as long as I want to keep it. And so I didn't know where it was, so I just searched it up, and there it was. So that's what I use for organizing sort of non-actionable items. Things that are actionable, I send them into Todoist. Todoist is a sort of a task list-making tool, highly configurable, can be organized into projects and sub-projects. You can add metadata to it in terms of how much energy you have, or really any kind of tagging system you want. And so my active projects with next actions on them live in Todoist. Reference material lives in Evernote. The trash lives in the trash. That's my organization system in a nutshell.
One of the terms that comes up a lot, boy, this has been coming up since as long as I've worked in an office environment, is the idea of incubating something. And we used to have these tickler files. I don't really use a lot of physical files today, but back in the day, before we had tools like Evernote, there would be a tickler file, and you know, the 12 months of the year would be in your filing cabinet. And then in the current month, the days of the month would be in the current month. And then if I knew you used your conference proposal, or your proposal sounds like you're going to be presenting at a conference, that would come in the past in a letter form. So we would take that letter. Oh, I got accepted. This is great. This is the information. I don't need to know about this until November. And we'd tuck it in our November. Right. And then when November 1st came around, we'd go and put our 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 all the way out to the end of the month. And then if your conference was on November 20th, but you needed to look at that on the 15th, it would go into the 15th. Now, I tried to use that form of incubation back in the file cabinet days for me. And I was notorious. Literally, there would be like 6 months would go by and I'd scratch my head and be like, I'm so confused. What happened? And what's so nice about technology tools is that they're way better than our brain, than relying on me just remembering to go look at that file. Because whenever I try to remember something like that, it's just not going to happen. I just don't have that kind of a brain.
The human brain is fantastic for processing information, but it's terrible for storing information. And that's a big point that I think David Allen brings up, is that you got to have this trusted system that lives outside your brain that does all this heavy lifting for you, right? Now, I still have an actual physical Tickler file in my drawer here at work. I mainly use it for like handouts for classes. Like I'll make a handout for next Wednesday, for example. I'll just stick it in that the folder for next Wednesday. But like in Evernote, you can set a reminder to pop up at any time that you wish. And so when you scan something into Evernote, you just set a reminder. It's no big deal. So the technology does all the heavy lifting for you. And all you have to do is act. I think that's kind of the essence of GTD, is you want to act in the moment by doing the best possible next action that fits the moment.
One of the other real downfalls to most people's systems, you used the phrase, and it is from David Allen, a trusted system. We can't take that lightly, because I just described a non-trusted system of my old office work days. Anytime our systems aren't working right, then we really need to think about, how can I make this a trusted system? And one of the biggest things is people putting due dates on things when they're really not due.
Oh my gosh, yes. You know, I get onto myself all the time about this, because I'm really bad about this. I'm trying to do better. If something doesn't have a deadline, don't put a deadline on it. And make it a higher priority if you must, so it'll have a system for raising priority items to a higher level of awareness. But yeah, you can really overload yourself with non-essential due dates.
The reason that we do that is because we don't want to forget about it, so we want it to bubble back up. But that often is a symptom of not doing the next step in the getting things done process, and that is to reflect. And the subtitle here is to review frequently. Look over your lists as often as necessary to determine what to do next. Do a weekly review to clean up, update your lists, and clear your mind. Tell us a little bit about your reflection process and your reviews that you do.
Yeah, I've got a weekly ritual on Sunday afternoons. This is the only work that I allow myself to do on Sundays, actually, is the weekly review. And I set aside like 90 minutes, it often takes a little longer than that, sometimes less, where I will just go. My kids are in youth group on campus here, so I'll just go to the library, quiet place, and I have a whole, my system of weekly review starts with clearing out all the inboxes, like everything, physical inboxes, email inboxes, my Google Keep, where I drop notes, the Todoist inbox, all of it. I decide where it goes. So I do anything that needs to be cleared gets cleared. And then I go through my next action list for my project. So I have a ton of projects I'm doing, and each one has several sort of little atomic sized actions to them. And one of them is at the top for next. And I'll just make sure that every project, anything that has actually been completed that I forgot to cross off, I'll cross off. If I need to update projects or archive projects or rearrange them somehow, I'll just make sure that everything in the system is kind of calibrated to what I want it to look like. And, that sometimes involves cutting, pasting, merging, changing things up, making sure every project actually has a next action denoted to it. If I have any projects that are stuck, I'm going to think about why and that sort of thing. And, if I'll check my, I have a text file that's called waiting for where I put anything that I'm waiting for, like responses to emails or reimbursement checks or whatever the case may be. I'll check that out and make sure that if I'm still waiting for something and I need to send an update, that's there. So all these things that we have done in the organization process, we just want to go through once a week is recommended, and just make sure it's all where it needs to be and there are no outstanding stuff sitting in the inbox. Now, I'll often do this little mini reviews like at the end of the day. I find that doing a quick mini review just to clear out the inboxes and get things put away into the right projects is a good sort of 3:30 in the afternoon type of action to do. When you're kind of run down, if you're tired, you don't really have the energy to do much else, you can at least process your inboxes. And then another thing that I do for reflecting is once a quarter, I have a quarterly review. I think a lot of times GTD people forget about the big picture. I think, unfortunately, it's where GTD has a lot of its strengths, is in the big picture. where I will just take a whole day off, excuse me, and go to a coffee shop or the library and just look at, kind of reflect on, you know, what I believe to be my life's purpose, my big areas of responsibility as a professor, as a teacher, a scholar, as a dad, where my 3 to 5 year goals are, what my 1 to 2 year goals are, what my 90 day goals are, and just make sure that the whole system is organized, not only in terms of projects, but also in terms of where it all fits in my life. And once a quarter to do that is very, very important. It just takes some time and make sure the whole system is sort of vertically integrated as well as, you know, in good trim as far as your projects and actions go.
One of the real concerns that people will bring up pretty instantly if they trust you and they start talking about their own attempts at managing better is the time factor. And they go, wait a second, he just said 90 minutes once a week. I don't have 5 minutes once a week. And how would you respond to that? How would you talk a little bit about what that 90 minutes means to you? Because we all have the same amount of time. And so you're choosing to invest 90 minutes. And if I'm just completely overwhelmed, I feel like I couldn't possibly do 90 minutes. How do you weigh that out with me? How do you help me see a different way maybe of looking at time and what that takes?
Well, suppose you didn't do it. I feel like that 90 minutes spent once a week probably saves me 3 hours in the week in terms of just having my stuff together, like literally my stuff put in order. And, you know, I think back to some people that I know who work really, really hard, but sometimes the busyness that we have is entirely self-inflicted. I mean, we work hard because we're disorganized, not because we're working hard. We're spending, you know, 2 or 3 minutes trying to find that one piece of paper or trying to even just sort of think about taking 5 minutes is trying to think about which of those 300 emails in our inbox is the one we ought to reply to next. Okay. So if you just invest a certain amount of time, an hour and a half, instead of doing something else, we totally have the time to do this. Anybody who says they don't have 5 minutes is not doing the math correctly on this. Spend it just organizing your work. It will absolutely streamline things to the point where it will save you tons of time and give you a much more peace of mind later on. So when it comes time to act on things, you know you're going to be acting on the right things, and you don't have to spend the time worrying about whether that other thing that you're not doing should be the thing that you are doing. And you also reduce your cognitive and emotional load in the process. Okay, so it's 90 minutes, sure, but it's kind of like 90 minutes spent at the gym. You know, you spend 90 minutes working at the gym, and it will give you energy and wellness and mindfulness that will make you a better person and a better professional in many, many other places. And it's well worth the investment.
Sometimes I found that when I take that time to reflect, because it is a little bit of a slower pace than, you know, going from class to class and all this interaction with people and the chaos of all of that. When I spend the more quiet, solitary time, then it gives me a chance to think about really what I should be saying no to. Because sometimes our lives really are out of control. I mean, in the sense of we really have committed to too much or there's too much on our plates. But that's the time where I can see it more holistically. Because a lot of people that I see, they're just managing their time and tasks out of email and out of whatever interactions they have during the day. They're bouncing from meeting to meeting and from student to other committees they're in, that sort of thing. And that doesn't ever give you a chance to reflect on your own meaning and significance and what it would mean to say no to something. I'll still remember I have a dear, dear friend of mine who it's really hard to say no to our dear friends. And she had asked me if I'd be some part of a committee and she's engaged in the fight against human trafficking. So that kind of makes it worse too, because you're like, I'm not even saving the world, you know? And she had asked me to be
wrong.
Yeah. She'd asked me to be on some steering committee. And I just I toiled at this because I don't want to say no to a friend. I don't want to say no to something that's really important as an issue in our world today. And I called her up on the phone and I let her know, like, I really want to help you. I really want to help this cause. But have you thought about asking this other guy? Because actually, I think it would be helpful for you because, you know, he's not really engaged in your work very much. He's not, you know, and it turned out that she had actually thought of him. And long story short, he was a better person to be engaged in the work that she was trying to do.
Sure,
and so it made me feel good that I had taken that time to reflect and realize that I'm not going to do the best job unless I say no and then suggest something else to her.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think for me, what I've learned about GTD, getting things done in the last year or two, is that it's all about having a plan for how you're going to live your life in the moment by moment scale. But it's not just the moment by moment. You also want to say yes to the things that matter and say no to everything else. I mean, most of the things that we say yes to don't matter. You know, most things don't matter to us. I mean, we have to say no to things that are, if they don't fit into the overall plan for our lives that we want for our lives, then we should be saying no to them. And it's okay to say no to them. And we need to give ourselves permission. So GTD is about having a system for making good choices about what you should be doing. And every time you make a choice to do something, you're also making a choice not to do something else. And you have to be comfortable with both. You have to be comfortable both with what you are doing and also with what you are not doing, because we can't do two things at the same time. And so, yeah, if something comes across my inbox, some kind of opportunity, even a great opportunity like the Human Trafficking Committee opportunity that you mentioned, in and of itself, it's a wonderful thing, but you still have to weigh, does it fit? You know, where does it fit? Is this something that makes sense for me, given the way I want to end up and live my life in 90 days, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, you know? And we have to say no to a lot of stuff. We just have to have a plan for how to say no and how to say yes.
We've mentioned the book Getting Things Done. Another great book along this same theme is called Essentialism by Greg McKeown. And I read that, and it's an easy read in the sense of it doesn't take that long. And boy, does it ever get you really honing in on the importance of saying no.
Yeah, I second that. I read that book over the summer. It kind of blew my mind. You know, a lot of what you hear about 90% of what we say, of what we encounter, really doesn't matter to us, at least. And we should be, you know, focusing our energies on far fewer things, generally speaking. That's kind of hard to hear for people in higher ed, because we get kind of in the notion that we ought to be saying yes to every single thing or we won't get tenure or something to that effect. But I don't know, as someone who's currently up for tenure and has also in the past been given tenure and evaluated people for tenure, I think I value colleagues who know what to say yes to rather than more so than colleagues who say yes to everything and then get nothing done.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to go through the first four steps and then we're going to talk about the last one. We've looked at capturing, collecting what has our attention. We've looked at clarifying. That's the processing what the things mean that we've captured. And then since we've captured, clarified, then we organize. We put those things where they belong. And then we talked a bit about reflecting, reviewing frequently. You talked about a daily review, a weekly review, and a quarterly review. And the last step is to engage. And this is where we simply do. And I wonder if you would describe a day that you had recently where you did some doing and what that looked like and how you knew what to work on and how that process goes.
Sure. I'll just run you through kind of the day today, actually. I like to schedule my time during the day, even though it's mostly scheduled for me. As even like the free time that I have, I want to have a sense of what I'm doing. So, you know, I have in my to-doist, I have it up here in front of me. I have some things that really do well and truly have due dates today. and so I want to make sure that I'm looking at those. But I also have labels set up. And so I have this it's a saved search in Todoist. You can bring up any action that is labeled as next. Okay, so at any given moment, I have to ask myself, what's my energy level? How much time do I have? And where am I? Those are the three things that kind of govern how you pick of the many, many next actions that I have. I'm counting 62 next actions in my list right now. Okay, amongst all my projects, personal, professional, whatever, 62 of them are labeled as next. These are things that I can do, like the next physical actions that I can do. It's like a little menu. I have very many, I have a lot more that are not labeled next. So I maybe have like 300 to-do items in my lists overall. It's overwhelming if you don't filter. So right now I'm have them filtered by what are the next actions in my project. I'm looking at some of them like prepare an assignment for next Monday, write a quiz for next Friday, read a chapter in this book, get tickets to a soccer match that's taking place in October, and so on and so forth. So I have all these next actions. So now I have to ask myself, okay, it's in late afternoon. As we're recording this, it's late afternoon on a Friday, okay? How much energy do I have? How much time do I have? And where am I? Okay, so I'm sitting here in my office right now. So anything that is not that anything that can only be done at home, I can't do that right now, right? I mean, it's easy logic, but I don't need to even think about actions in my lists that can only be done at home. Likewise, if I'm home and I don't have the means to get to campus, anything that has to take place on campus, that doesn't even need to enter my consciousness. So I'm not thinking about that. My energy level is kind of like medium low right now. So I'm not going to try to tackle a high energy task right now. That would just have to be redone later because it would be terrible. And I may have like an hour left before I go home. So I don't want to tackle anything that takes a long amount of time. So I can search through and slice through all my data here and look just for the next actions that have low energy, medium amounts of time, and can be done at a computer or in my office. All right. You can do this with a paper notebook. I mean, you don't have to have an information system to do this. But in Todoist, I can. That's just a simple query to the database of actions that I have. It's simpler than it sounds, actually. And so I think that brings up like five things. Okay, so of that list of five things, I just picked the one that I like the best off of it. These are all things that I can do that fit the moment, right? Fit my energy level, fit the time that I have available, and fit my location. And so just pick your favorite one and just do it. And then that's that. And then move on to the next one, right? And if you just filter things down, it becomes a much smaller list, and psychologically it becomes much easier to get one thing done. If you just do one thing, do that one next action, that's more than you would have if you were just staring at an email inbox with 500 things in it.
Sometimes when people hear stories, and by the way, thank you for, those are such good examples. And oh, actually, I'm going to ask you quick to give a few examples of something you can't do. I mean, you told us about writing a quiz, tickets to the soccer match, but what are some of the 300? Could you just give a couple examples of what's on that list that you couldn't do right now?
Absolutely. One of them I put on last night is clean my grill at home. I had a little bit of an incident cooking some pork chops last night. I have to clean the grill. I obviously cannot clean my grill right now because I am 20 minutes away from it, right? It's not possible for me to do this, right? Or get passport photos for my kids. That is something that I need to do when it's time, but it's an errand, and I cannot run an errand when I'm sitting here recording a podcast. Here's something that takes a long time, like working through a tutorial that I found online for a piece of software that I use. Okay, that's probably going to take me 2 hours, and 2 hours I need to be home, so I can't even start that right now. In fact, it's questionable. Maybe I should break that. Maybe that's not a task. Maybe that's like a project in itself that can be broken down into smaller pieces. Or here's one, clean out my crawl space. I mean, it's just not physically possible for me to do this, so why even look at it? That's you should only be considering the next actions that are appropriate for the time, energy, and context that you have in front of you at the moment.
And I want to encourage people, if you're early in your GTD days, or this is the first time I've even heard about it, you don't have to do all of it the day you get started. And that's really key. And Robert, you mentioned that you're probably not as good as you'd like to be about due dates, that you're guilty of putting a due date on something that's not actually due on a day. And what I am guilty of, although I'm not feeling too guilty about it, is I don't use all of those contexts that you just mentioned. Because for me, in our family, my husband tends to do more of the errands. He does most of the grocery shopping, and it's just funny. I tend to be kind of a homebody. So I've got like if it's something that we're going to order, we have a grocery delivery service from Amazon. And so that's my idea of going grocery shopping, is I don't have to leave the house. I just go into the app. In fact, there's a cool little gadget that we have that when you sign up for the service, you can just talk into it or scan the barcode if you're running out of Cheez-Its or something. Yeah. And that'll add it right to your list, and you can review that list the next time you actually go to do the shopping. So I don't really use context that much. I do have some location-based ones. So it's your phones. A lot of times the apps that we're talking about will notify me. Oh, you're at Vanguard. You could make copies right now. I don't have a copier at home. You know, I have a printer, but I don't have a copier. So I'll get to Vanguard and it'll say, make a copy of next week's exam, because my phone knows. And the tool that I use is called OmniFocus, but a lot of them do this with the context of location. Your phone's GPS knows that you're on campus, and it can, if you want it to, tell you these are the kinds of things that are coming up soon that you have a due date for or whatever that you could do today. And but I find that a lot of those location ones, I just don't use them quite as much. It sounds like you're much more disciplined about that particular one. And the other thing that I have probably never done is the time-based ones. And that's something I could get better at. But GTD will do for us whatever we put into it. And the time that we put in, you know, you're probably working that much more effectively because you do have those times in there of how long various things will take you.
I hope so. I know that that's not something I used to do, but it makes a lot of sense. I mean, this is part of an evolutionary process, right? I mean, so, like I said, I've been using GTD for over a decade now. And when I started, it was real simple because that's all I could handle. And it's fine. It's fine to start simple. I think if you read David Allen's book, you'll be good to go, honestly. Over time, you know, my contexts have evolved. So, I mean, I don't have a huge list. I'm just three for energy, three for time, and then a handful of others. I also feel like sometimes the context can refer to like the psychological state that you're in. Like mm-hmm. I have a context for grading. That's something I could really do any physical place, but I kind of have to be in a certain frame of mind, like an emotional place to grade papers, right? And so I have a grading context. And so whenever I'm in the grading context, I'm in the mood for it, I click on my little label that says grading and it pops up a little list of stuff I can grade. And I just pick one and go with it.
One of the contexts that I have found really helpful is to have them for certain programs. And an example would be our learning management system is Canvas. I put as a context for Canvas, I might have 15 things. If I go and log in 15 different times because I don't realize how many tasks have built up that have to do with Canvas, I'm not batch processing. I'm not being smart about, hey, just log in once, take care of the 15 and you're out. In probably less than half the time if I had logged in every separate time. I do that for email. I do that for calendar. I have different programs that when it's up, then I can see what tasks I could take care of while I was in that particular application.
Right, or phone is another one too that you can batch process. It's more efficient to make, if you have a bunch of phone calls to make, do them all at the same time while you're on the phone. Because sometimes you're not near a phone or you're not in a position where you can talk on the phone. And so that phrase you mentioned, batch processing, it's really huge. And that's what contexts are all about. You kind of go with your context. If I'm not in a position where I can talk on the phone, then I don't need to even be thinking about the phone. But the flip side of that is if I do have the ability to make some phone calls, I should just do all of them at the same time. And it's incredible how much time that frees up. It's like you get nickel and dimed to death spending 30 seconds to 90 seconds switching contexts. And so all that context switching really adds up to probably 90 minutes worth of weekly review, if we totaled it up during the week. That for me, that was the big selling point for GTD, is just realizing how much time I waste in little 90-second to 5-minute bursts trying to decide what to do next. If I could just pay that up front, it would probably be way less time than the sum total of all that experience throughout the week. So batch processing is a good thing.
And this idea of batch processing actually takes me to my recommendation for today's episode. And it was a real awakening for me. I have been, and people who have been listening to the show for a while know that I'm a little bit of a zealot when it comes to having an inbox zero or zero inbox. And that means that my goal on the vast majority of days, I get my email inboxes down to zero. No inbox. There's no emails in my inbox. That doesn't mean I do everything that was in my email, those actions that were represented, but that means they go over into my trusted system, which is OmniFocus, and then I can look more holistically at other tasks that didn't come through email. And so this was an awakening for me. It's a tool called SaneBox, and SaneBox is a paid service. There are different types of services you can pay for, from the very little amount all the way up. You could pay a lot more than I'm paying. And what it does for you is it goes through your inboxes and it sorts them out for you. And it gets smarter over time, because if it gets something wrong, you can drag an email to train it and it will never forget where you want that one to go. And in my case, I'm using a SaneBox for newsletters. I get a few of them. I actually usually like to just rely on having a news reader that will grab those things. But if I have a few that still come in, and so those go into my SaneBox newsletters folder. And then I have one called Sane Later. And those are things that aren't urgent. As an example, the learning management system Canvas, they send out weekly updates about new features that are coming. I don't need to read that necessarily even today, tomorrow, it could be 4 days from now, and it wouldn't be the end of the world. So what SaneBox does is allows for my inbox to truly be the most essential emails, and it's very intelligent about sorting, but if it ever gets something wrong, I just click and drag. And I'll put a link in the show notes, too, if people want to check out SaneBox. I think they have a free 2-week trial, I believe, and you can check it out for yourself. Robert, what do you have to recommend today?
You know, the last time I was on your show, Bonnie, I had a bunch of recommendations for tools for software. And I've already mentioned plugged a Todoist earlier in the show. And I would just like to come back and plug it again. Honestly, it's been such a great tool for me to use, Todoist.com. It is a task management tool that is available across platform. You can access it through a web browser or Android, Windows 10, Mac, you name it. And so it's omnipresent, and that's the most important thing about a system, a GTD system. For me, it has to be something I can get to any place, any time. And so it's free. There's a paid upgraded subscription that is relatively inexpensive. It's paid, but it's totally worth the money on it. And again, it allows you to create projects and getting things done. There's a distinction between projects and tasks. And as academics, I can absolutely say, one of our big downfalls is we often think something is a task, like a single thing, when really it's a project, like grading test 3. Okay, that's not a task. That's like a bunch of things. And so unbundling the tasks from projects is a very important step towards getting things done. It's hard for me to conceive of grading a test sometimes, but it's easy to think about grading 5 tests. You know, 5 instances of student work rather than like 35 of them. So Todoist is a tool that will sort these things. You can email directly. You can forward emails from your inbox into Todoist. You can set it up, use an Android phone. You can set up your voice commands to send voice messages that you speak into your phone that will transcribe them and turn them into Todoist tasks. There are automations available and integrations available for calendar programs. So for me, Todoist is a fantastic sort of central hub, command operation center for all the stuff that I do. I would be hard pressed to get through a day without it, that's for sure.
And it looks like it also has project templates, and I'll put a link in the show notes to some posts that I've written before about checklists, and those are great things to take advantage of at the start of an academic year, start of a semester, and so on.
Sure. Todoist can be used as sort of just a very fancy checklist program with no frills.
Yeah, that's one of the things that seems like really good that it does, where you can just start real basic and then get more advanced as you go.
Yes.
Robert, thank you so much for joining me again on Teaching in Higher Ed and contributing this. I know you've been thinking about it now since we agreed to talk today, and just really appreciate your time and expertise.
Well, thanks for having me on again, Bonnie. It's fun to talk about this, and I hope it's helpful.
Thanks. It was great getting to talk with Dr. Robert Talbert today. Thank you again, Robert, for being here. And if you want to follow up on all the resources that Robert and I talked about, you can find them at the show notes at teachinginhighered.com/120. Lots of links there this time. And if you don't want to have to remember to go grab those links, I suggest you subscribe to the weekly update. It's only a single email in your inbox each week with all of the show notes, and included in that email is an article about teaching or productivity. You can subscribe at teachinginhighered.com/subscribe, and it'll also get you a copy of the EdTech Essentials Guide, and that's 19 tools to help you with productivity and using technology in your teaching. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.